Our speaker today is Dr. William Pierce, the chairman of the National Alliance, which is the world's foremost organization working for the long-term interest of white Americans and for people of European ancestry wherever they may live.
Hello. An Associated Press news story recently caught my attention. The story was about the release from prison this week of a black religious leader who calls himself Yahweh Ben Yahweh. His name actually is Hulan Mitchell. He's a former black Muslim, and in fact he ran a black Muslim mosque in Atlanta for a while in the early 1970s, until he was accused of sexual improprieties with underaged Muslim girls and dipping into the collection plate. He dropped out of the Nation of Islam, where he was known as Hulan X, and in 1978 founded his own church, the so-called Nation of Yahweh, with a religion based on Judaism. He calls his followers Black Hebrew Israelites and tells them that they, rather than the Jews, are the chosen people ordained by God to rule the world, as described in the Old Testament. He took for himself the name Yahweh ben Yahweh. That's Hebrew for God the Son of God. So, why should we be interested in yet another megalomaniac religious cult based on Judaism? Well, the thing of interest to us about the Nation of Yahweh is the initiation requirement Hulan Mitchell established for the elite inner circle of his church, the so-called Brotherhood. The requirement was the murder of a white person and the bringing to Mitchell of some evidence of the murder, such as an ear or even the head of the victim. In fact, Mitchell preached to his whole congregation that the killing of white people, of blue-eyed devils, is pleasing to Yahweh. By the time the police finally wound up Mitchell's race murder cult in November 1990 and packed Mitchell off to prison, his followers had butchered and mutilated at least 23 men, women, and children, 14 of them in Miami alone. Some of the victims were recalcitrant members of his own church, and the Associated Press story doesn't give a racial breakdown. But the figure I've seen elsewhere puts the number of white victims at 16. Mitchell spent a little over 10 years in prison. That works out to about 8 months for the murder of each blue-eyed devil. He was released on parole earlier this week. You didn't hear about it? You didn't see anything about it on CNN or network television? You shouldn't be surprised. It's not the sort of news that the bosses of the controlled media want you to know about. There was a story about it last Saturday in the Washington Post, but the entire thrust of that story is the infringement of Mitchell's civil rights by the conditions imposed on him by the parole board that released him. The Washington Post article is not headed "Black Cult Leader Who Ordered Ritual Murder of Whites to Be Released." Oh, no. A headline like that would be considered racist by the people who run the Post. They are afraid it might make white readers wary of blacks. It might even lead some readers to ask questions, such as, why has this nutcase black murderer been turned loose? Although I myself am not so optimistic about the ability of white Americans to figure out who their enemies are and react appropriately. The actual head on last Saturday's Washington Post story is "No Freedom of Religion for Yahweh." And the subhead is "Parole Commission Limits Contact with His Followers." There's no mention at all in the story about the initiation requirements for the Brotherhood or of the ritual murder of blue-eyed devils. Just one cryptic mention at the end of Mitchell playing with the severed ear of a white victim. The story deals almost entirely with Mitchell's contesting of the conditions imposed on his parole by the parole board. They told him that he couldn't have any further contact with the more than 1,000 members of the Nation of Yahweh. His lawyers have gone to court to have the conditions on his parole removed. You know, I remember the same sort of reluctance on the part of the controlled news media to report the details of Mitchell's activities 10 years ago when he was arrested, charged, tried, and sent to prison. There was minimal publicity, as if the media bosses were embarrassed by the whole affair. It's worth our noting that Mitchell got his idea for the initiation requirement into his so-called brotherhood, the inner circle of his church, from a similar operation by the Nation of Islam during the time he was a member of that group. I talked about this in a broadcast a couple of years ago, but it's worth repeating. During a six-month period in 1973 and 1974, and Mitchell was a high-ranking member of the Nation of Islam then, an elite group inside the Nation of Islam called the Death Angels murdered several hundred white men, women, and children. The exact number will never be known because many of the victims were so-called street people, runaway teenaged girls on drugs, hippies and the like, people who weren't missed when they disappeared. There were many of these pitiful lost souls on the streets of San Francisco in the 1960s and the 1970s, products of the great counterculture revolution promoted on American university campuses by Jews like Jerry Rubin and A.B. Hoffman in the 1960s. Their corpses often were hacked up and dumped in the ocean or buried. But the San Francisco police who tracked the Death Angels counted 15 very tangible victims from all walks of life, not just street people. 15 murdered white people and 8 others who were seriously injured during attempts to murder them. While they were looking for the killers, the police referred to the series of murders as the zebra killings, all black on white. Eventually, the Death Angels were broken up when San Francisco police arrested 8 of them. 4 of them were put on trial, and after the longest trial in California history, a year and 6 days, they were convicted on all counts. The transcript for the trial fills nearly 14,000 pages and fills 141 volumes. During the trial, one witness, Anthony Harris, a Death Angel himself, spent 12 days testifying to the horrifying details of Death Angel operations. The Nation of Islam taught that the killing of a blue-eyed devil is pleasing to Allah, just as Hulon Mitchell later taught that it is pleasing to Yahweh. Inside the Nation of Islam, there was an elite organization whose members had especially pleased Allah. That was the Death Angels. To become a Death Angel, one had to murder 9 white men, or 5 white women, or 4 white children. In 1974, the San Francisco chapter alone of the Death Angels had 15 accredited members. Some of the white victims were taken to a loft used by the San Francisco chapter of Death Angels, where they were tied to chairs and tortured to death in ways far too gruesome to describe here. Harris testified that he was given the butchered remnants of one of these kidnapped white torture victims, all trussed up in a plastic sheet like a turkey, and told to drive the package to a bluff overlooking San Francisco Bay and throw it into the water. And the killing wasn't confined to San Francisco or even California. Other chapters of the Death Angels murdered whites in New York, in Georgia, in Florida. The word spread among black Muslims everywhere, and it is very difficult to believe that Hulon Mitchell did not get the idea for his brotherhood and its initiation requirement from the Death Angels. As with the Death Angels in California, many of the ritual murder victims chosen by Mitchell's black Hebrew Israelites were the easiest white victims, people who wouldn't be missed, young runaways, street people, low-class whites who lived in black neighborhoods or who socialized with blacks. Well, as I said earlier, in November 1990, the police finally caught up with Hulon Mitchell, also known as Yahweh Ben Yahweh, and charged him and his followers with 14 murders in the Miami area. And now he's out of prison again, and the only question is whether or not he'll be permitted to run the Nation of Yahweh again. A couple of much more interesting questions for us are, first, why was this hate-crazed mass murderer of white people turned loose under any conditions? 10 years for sending his followers out to murder 23 people, or 14 if we count only those in Miami, and then turned loose on us again. Imagine that this murderer was a neo-Nazi leader who sent his followers out to kill Jews as initiation requirements, bringing back an ear from each victim as proof to their leader that they had done as ordered. Do you think that there's any chance the government would be turning him loose, simply imposing on him the condition that he no longer could be a neo-Nazi leader? Can you imagine the howl you would hear from the media if that did happen? There would be no end to it. There would be tearful interviews with relatives of the victims on network television every day. The media would put on an even bigger circus than the one they put on after the dragging death of a black ex-convict in Jasper, Texas, 3 years ago. And we would hear from the media a non-stop chorus of hate, 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 and hate crime, hate crime, hate crime, racism, racism, racism. You know that's the way the media would react. You've already heard it from them often enough. Why then the almost total silence about the release of Hulon Mitchell, alias Yahweh Ben Yahweh? Why is neither the word hate nor the phrase hate crime used even once in the Washington Post story about the controversy over the conditions of his release? Why is the general public almost completely ignorant of who this man is and what he did, even if it happened 11 years ago? Why is the public just as ignorant of the hundreds of zebra murders committed by the death angels? Why do the controlled mass media never say anything about these atrocious murders of white people by blacks? It's not that there's a shortage of facts. As I said, there are 14,000 pages of horrifying testimony from the death angels trial. Could it possibly be that the reason for the silence of the media is that the murderers are black and the victims are white? And that contradicts the media party line, the Jewish party line, that blacks are the good guys and whites are the bad guys, and that in any interracial conflict, blacks are the victims and whites are the aggressors? Could that be it? Before I tell you about another recent news story that may help to answer these questions, I'll mention that if you have an inquiring mind and want to dig up the facts on the horrendous zebra killings which inspired Yahweh Ben Yahweh, a good place for you to start is with Clark Howard's 1979 documentary book, Zebra. That book will lead you to other sources. Although it is out of print, you should be able to find it in a larger library if it hasn't been purged by the minions of political correctness. The other recent news story is from Denver's Rocky Mountain News, which is one of Colorado's major newspapers. It's about preliminary court proceedings late last month against a gang of teenagers in Colorado Springs who murdered another teenager and his grandparents in a rural area 50 miles west of Colorado Springs. There are several things about this story which make it potentially interesting at a national level, and yet it has not been touched by the news media outside of Colorado. Is it possible that the media bosses feel that they've already given enough attention to teenaged murderers in Colorado with the saturation coverage of the shootings at Columbine High School in Littleton, less than 100 miles from Colorado Springs? I really don't think that's their reason for suppressing this story outside of Colorado, but I'll let you be the judge of that. The murders took place at the beginning of this year, and the murderers were arrested during the past few months as the police gathered evidence. Charged with murder now are Isaac Grimes, 16, Jonathan Matheny and Glenn Irwin, both 18, and Simon Sue, 19. Their trials are scheduled for later this year. Grimes, Matheny, and Urban are white. Simon Sue is a non-white immigrant from Guyana in South America, primarily of Indian ancestry. He is the local gang leader of a paramilitary anti-racist organization with roots in Guyana. He calls his organization Operation and Reconnaissance Agents, but it usually is identified in news reports from Colorado Springs only by its initials, OARA. Sue preached to the other teenagers about the evils of white racism, and he ordered them to commit several burglaries to steal guns and money to be used for fighting racism. One of their victims is 15-year-old Tony Dutcher, who was a schoolmate of theirs in Colorado Springs. On previous occasions, Tony had invited his classmate Isaac Grimes to the rural home of his grandparents. During one of these visits, Grimes had decided that the grandfather, 60-year-old Carl Dutcher, was a white racist, and he reported this back to Sue and the other members of OARA. Sue decided that Carl Dutcher should be killed because of his racial beliefs. During the New Year's school vacation at the beginning of this year, Grimes visited Tony at his grandparents' rural home. The two boys camped out in a lean-to behind the Dutcher home. During the night, Grimes crept up behind Tony with a knife and cut his throat as he lay in his sleeping bag. Police said that Tony's throat had been cut all the way to the spinal column, and he bled to death. Grimes then went into the Dutcher's house and awaited the arrival of another member of the anti-racist gang, Jonathan Matheny. When Matheny arrived, he shot Carl Dutcher with a rifle. Dutcher's wife, 58-year-old Joanna, barricaded herself in a bathroom, but Matheny shot her through the bathroom door. Grimes finished them off by slitting their throats. Now, I don't think it's necessary for me to explain to you why the Jewish bosses of the national news media decided this was a story you didn't need to hear about. What's indisputable is that it was a horribly atrocious series of murders with several very newsworthy aspects, and that if you live outside of Colorado, you didn't hear a peep about it until I told you about it a moment ago. Suppose that the murderers, instead of being members of an anti-racist gang led by a non-white, had been white racists, and their victims had been chosen because one of the victims favored racial mixing. Do you believe that the media bosses would have suppressed the story of the murders or decided that it just wasn't newsworthy? Of course, stories of black-on-white crime are suppressed by the media every day. I chose this particular story to tell you about today because it not only illustrates the way in which news is selectively reported by the controlled media in order to support their party line, but it also illustrates the concrete results of the anti-white brainwashing conducted by the media and the schools. We might, with good justification, blame the murders of the Dutcher family on the Washington government's insane immigration policy, which permits resentful, hate-filled, non-white trash such as Simon Sue into this country. With even better justification, we can blame the murders on the racial propaganda campaign of the media, the government, the schools, and the churches. That propaganda campaign pumps into the heads of young white people the lies that all the races really are the same under the skin, that the only reason members of all races can't live happily and productively together is the divisive effect of white racism, and that whites who don't want to live and interbreed with non-whites are hate-filled and irrational and are the cause of all interracial strife. The propagandists don't come right out and say it, but they certainly imply that these white racists who are holding back racial progress and making things unpleasant for everyone ought to be done away with in some way. That certainly was the message that teenagers Isaac Grimes, Jonathan Matheny, and Glenn Urban absorbed from television and from their school teachers. That was the message that led them to obey the orders of the hate-filled mongrel from Guyana and murder the Dutcher family. Interestingly enough, it's also the message that played a major role in the Columbine Massacre in Littleton, Colorado in April 1999. The two teenaged murderers at Columbine High School, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, were fervent anti-racists and fantasized on their internet website about torturing and murdering white racists. Where do you think they picked up these sick and poisonous ideas? Who put the idea into their heads that we live in a racist society and that racists ought to be killed? If you remember the spin put on the Columbine Massacre by the Jewish media bosses right after the killings is that Harris and Klebold were neo-Nazis and racists, even though one of them, Klebold, was a Jew. It wasn't until later, when investigators began looking into the private lives and the internet postings of the two killers, that it came out that they were not racists, but rather were fanatical anti-racists. But that fact never received much publicity, even though several pungent excerpts from their website were reported in the New York Times. The average American couch potato still believes that killers were white racists who deliberately targeted blacks in their massacre because that was the lie that was propagated by the media immediately after the massacre and was never withdrawn. The point of all this is that the controlled mass media in America are consistent and deliberate in their policy of deception. Whether it was their intense anti-apartheid and anti-white propaganda against Rhodesia and South Africa back when those were both white countries, followed by the deafening silence of the media about the horror of what's happening in those two countries today under black rule, or their silence about the atrocious series of zebra murders of blue-eyed devils in this country by the death angels, and then by Yahweh Ben Yahweh's black Hebrew Israelites, or the spin they put on their reporting of the Columbine Massacre in 1999, or their suppression of the story of the butchery of the Dutcher family in Colorado this year, they consistently suppress or minimize news which might undermine their multi-culti egalitarian propaganda. They consistently suppress or minimize news of non-white aggression against whites. They slant the news with the deliberate intention of making white people feel apologetic or even guilty for defending themselves against non-whites. They deliberately attempt to disarm us morally and keep us off guard. They deliberately conceal from us information which would lead us to question their policies or their motives. They deliberately deceive us with the intention of making us believe that things are rosy wherever their policies have been put into effect, such as in South Africa and Rhodesia, and that everything will be rosy here when their open border immigration policies and their plans for more hate crime and speech crime laws have had time to take effect. They are consistent and deliberate in their use of the media to deceive us because their aim is to weaken us and destroy us the way they already have weakened the white people of South Africa and destroyed the white people of Rhodesia. The Jews are our misfortune. The Jews are the eternal enemies of our people. Thanks for being with me again today.
You have been listening to a presentation of American Dissident Voices. The speaker was Dr. William Pierce, chairman of the National Alliance. The program was sponsored as a public service by National Vanguard Books, America's foremost supplier of patriotic books and tapes. For $2, we'll send you our newest 72-page illustrated catalog with descriptions and ordering information for more than 600 books and tapes of interest to patriots. Many of the items in the National Vanguard Books catalog are available nowhere else. Our mailing address is National Vanguard Books, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.